You're listening to the most creative mind in the universe. Inspirado Projecto.
Dig that. That was Pauly Shores from Yachtly Crew. He's an extraordinary saxophone player, flautist. He plays many different saxophones. I believe he plays trumpet too. This guy, he knows how to play all kinds of stuff. Very, very good. You got to come out and see who I like to call the Evel Knievel of Yacht Rock, Pauly Shores. You got to see him out there at the shows. We have an upcoming show on the 28th and 29th at a place called The Sound, which is in the town called Del Mar. So I'm very excited about that. This episode, I'm so excited. This interview occurred April 17th on my way to O'Hare Airport from Carroll Stream, Illinois, the Hampton out there, right off of Geary Avenue and North Avenue. And this is a great interview. I love getting into these talks with folks who are just so into philosophy, into science fiction. This guy's a computer engineer, very strong Catholic. So if you're offended by religious stuff, you know, just keep listening. You might find a lot of commonalities in what this guy is talking about. It's quite interesting. It's really quite interesting. We get into Isaac Asimov. We start talking about artificial intelligence, of course, the early days of the internet. It's really quite fascinating. So stay tuned for that. Up next, we have Henry D. Horace with a fun fact. And stick around after the interview for something extra special. All right, we've got some call-ins here. Jessica Eden from Life is Art reality show podcast, also Man Behind the Machine podcast. By the way, if you want to leave voice messages, these wonderful people I'm describing here, they have left voice messages. Pauly Shore is called the hotline, 561-203-9179. If you want to call the hotline, I will put you on the show. Call the hotline, 561-203-9179. Or if you want to leave a voice message, you can go to anchor.fm/inspiradoprojecto. Anchor.fm/inspiradoprojecto. And you can actually leave a voice message that will be on here. It's much easier to leave a message on the voicemail, though. So we're going to hear these wonderful people talk about wonderful things. And also, Stu Strauss from Twin Peaks is gonna have something to say. All right, thank you so much for listening to Inspirado Projecto.
David Lynch personally started a campaign in Hollywood to get Laura Dern an Oscar nomination for her performance in Inland Empire. He sat on the side of the road with a cow during this campaign, which was, unfortunately, unsuccessful. Stay tuned to Inspirado Projecto for more fun facts.
My oldest is a dentist.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, my middle one, she's a nurse.
Holy cow.
Yeah, and, you know, they're both making six figures, and they're awesome. And my third right now, he's going to college. He's looking to be an HVAC tech. And he has been working his ass off, saving money to buy his first three flat.
Oh, wow.
You know, I basically took my dad's mentality and I just kept it going.
That's brilliant.
My main job is a computer engineer.
Oh, cool.
So I make decent money, but not enough to pay for three full cars.
kids are making so much money, do you think they'd consider helping pay off their own college bills?
Yeah, you know, it's something I don't want them to worry about right now. Right now, mm-hmm. I'll be coming to them. Receipts mm-hmm. will come. You know, like I told my wife, I told her, I said, listen, we're always going to have our teeth taken care of. We have somebody that's going to take care of us in our old age.
Yeah.
And we'll have a place to stay.
That is brilliant. It's brilliant. That's a great way of looking at it.
It'll come back, you know. Well,
yeah. Wow, that's great, man. You raised great kids.
So far, I haven't screwed them up.
So you're, what did you say you're doing, your computer?
Computer engineer.
Computer engineer. And then what does that encompass?
Well, now it's all programming. It's all coding. But it, you know, back in the, what computer engineering is like I could take this cell phone, I could take it apart, and I could tell you what all the chips are doing.
Oh, interesting.
And, you know, so it's computer engineering is hardware and software interfacing.
Oh my gosh.
So, you know, this panel, this LCD display is connected to the microprocessor and how they communicate and write software so it can display these buttons and detect the presses and all that stuff.
Incredible. Wow, man, you would have been very valuable on this, on the, what is it, the Star Trek Enterprise. You're a big fan of Star Trek?
Yeah.
Oh, of course you are. That's amazing. I just finally saw, I think when I was a little kid, I tried to watch Star Trek when I was a little kid, and I think it just didn't have enough action in it for me growing up as a kid, but then I watched the series probably about a year ago, and I was like, oh my gosh, this show is like Twilight Zone in space. It's phenomenal.
It totally is.
Oh my gosh. It is like, it's like, oh my God. Everyone's got, like, you know, like every episode has a moral to the story, and there are like intricate little complications going on, and oh my gosh, it's just such a brilliant show.
It's social commentary done in science fiction.
And it's such a, wow, they do such a great job with it.
You know, one of the most groundbreaking episodes was the one where you had a race of beings that were at war with each other, where half their face was black and the other half of the face was white.
Oh.
And then the other race, it had the two sides flipped.
Oh my gosh.
The other side was white and the other side was black.
Oh my gosh.
And they were at war because they hated each other because they had different flipped faces.
Incredible.
And then from Captain Kirk's perspective, he's like, why are you guys fighting?
Yeah.
And so it was a commentary of race.
I love it. Yeah. So it brilliant.
It was a brilliant episode. It's considered one of the most groundbreaking episodes on TV history.
And that's the, you know, that's the cool thing with science fiction is that they can always talk about what's going on right now and kind of put a saran wrap around, you know, sneak in to make it seem like it's in the future, but really this stuff is exactly going on right now.
Yeah.
Ray Bradbury was great with that too, and I think that's what I feel like, maybe this is popping into my brain right now. Maybe science fiction was devised out of because writers felt worried about writing about particular things going on in the society and getting shunned or getting, you know, maybe punished or something. So then they decided, well, okay, I really want to write about what's going on today and my thoughts and opinions about going on, what's going on in society, but let me, what if I disguise it so it's in the future so that maybe I can get away with that, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Those sci-fi guys, I used to read Isaac Asimov.
Oh, cool.
He's another guy that did.
He did iRobot, right?
No. He's way earlier than that. Gosh, why am I drawing? I'm drawing a blank on his books. I've read like three of his books. But, when I was a kid, back in like 1975, 1980. Yeah, but he, and Ray Bradbury, they always saw themselves as futurists.
my gosh, that's right.
And then, you know, he has the medical device that kind of goes over and tells you.
Oh, yeah.
What you're going to have. Well, guess what? That's what we're heading to.
Totally.
We're totally going to have that where they're going to go and they're just going to wave something on your chest that's going to tell you exactly everything you have.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's so incredible because, you know, what was it? It's so funny because you can see it happen all the time. All this stuff that was considered science fiction is we've been seeing it become science fact, you know, yeah. Just like what you're saying there. And, like, one thing that's popping in my brain right now is that I don't know, several months ago, I reread Martian Chronicles, and he talks about the canals on Mars. The canals on Mars. And now, you know, our people are like, yeah, there were canals. There was water on Mars. So it's like he foresaw that. And I wonder about this a lot of times with science fiction, and I think maybe it's both. It's like the chicken or the egg type of thing, where are they prophesying the future, and or are they causing that future to happen?
Oh,
you know, so it's kind of both, isn't
that's
it?
That's scary.
Because there was an H.G. Wells, I was reading about how H.G. Wells, they had found this manuscript, like, in an old chest, you know, somewhere, like, an estate sale or something. And the manuscript was an unpublished manuscript, and, it, you know, he had died already, okay? So he had died already, and in this manuscript, it talks about tall buildings made of only glass. Well, way back when he wrote it, skyscrapers did not exist
right,
way back
right,
then. But
yeah.
He foresaw that future. So in that case, he foresaw the future. No one even got a chance to be inspired by what he created in the book to go, hey, you know what? I want to see that happen in reality. So it's quite interesting when you think about that.
Well, H.G. Wells, okay, there's a lot of people that believe that he can see the future.
Wow.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
He's different from the other two, Ray Bradbury and Isaac Asimov. Both of them are considered futurists. H.G. Wells, who is a very strong Catholic, by the way, and
incredible.
He saw submarines. He saw helicopters. He fully described helicopters.
Astounding.
Like, how could a person with no degree in flying or anything, you know, planes were just becoming a thing, understand what a helicopter was?
Wow, man.
Yeah, a lot of people believed he could see the future.
Well, it's interesting because then it's like, you know, if you want to, you know, if you dial back the hands of time to, like, biblical times where they're like, well, this guy's a prophet, that guy's a prophet, I feel that maybe he would have fit perfectly in there, huh?
Yeah.
Like, modern-day people, if they would have embraced what the heck he was seeing for his books and his visions, they would have been like, okay, we got to pay attention to this guy. This guy's a prophet. There's something going on here.
Something going on here. They asked Isaac Asimov, what's the greatest threat in the 21st century? And he paused. Now, everybody was expecting him to say nuclear annihilation because this was during the, you know, 60s and 70s.
Oh.
You know, like, when I was a kid, I was born in 1970. When I was 5 years old, we had nuclear explosion drills.
Oh.
In school, where we had to get under our desk and put our heads down.
I remember seeing footage of that. So you actually had to do that, huh?
Yeah, I experienced that. Every year we did that for 4 years. You're expecting to get annihilated.
Oh my gosh.
Nuclear weapon. So they were expecting him to say that. That's not what he said. He surprised everybody. He said the greatest threat to humanity in the 21st century is going to be boredom.
Incredible. Incredible.
And they said why. He said because robots are going to do everything.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
And we're seeing that rapidly.
We are, especially I've been seeing so much of the AI, like it is growing by leaps and bounds. Every day I'm getting blasted by friends of mine who are showing me some new AI programs that just got invented. And, you know, some new extension for this program and ChatGPT, and then there's a new one called Agent GPT, and then there's, you know, all these different chat bots, and
they're amazing.
It's astounding. Have you been going down the ChatGPT rabbit hole?
I've been reading about it. I haven't gotten involved in it. I've done a lot of AI programming.
Oh, wow.
AI behavioral trees and stuff like
that. Oh, wow.
You know, and I've done a lot of that for about 5 years, and I've been predicting this stuff since 1988.
Wow.
About the way AI was going to get integrated, and it's happening the way I expected it to.
Wow.
And, okay, so here, I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. Okay?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so the internet, I'm going to first backtrack a little bit about my experience with the internet. Okay, so I actually worked with websites in the 1990s.
Incredible. It's called Shareware Shop?
Shareware Shop. And I ended up selling it, and making money off of that. I bought my first home off of that money.
Incredible.
And, that was back in the early 1990s. But I actually, a friend of mine came to me. He was a business guy. So the problem is I wasn't a business guy. I'm a computer nerd. Mm. And he was a businessman. And he came to me and he showed me all the stats. And he goes, we could be millionaires in 2 years.
Oh, my gosh.
He goes, but I need a genius. And he's like, he goes, and you're a genius. Because I had servers. I was one of the first people to have servers running out of my house.
Oh, my gosh.
I had a T1 brought into my house. Spending $2,000 a month back then.
Whoa.
For a T1.
Whoa.
I had servers, everything, right?
Whoa.
And so I could make all this happen.
Whoa.
And he goes, we're gonna make an adult search engine.
Oh boy.
And the concept was basically like, you put in a naughty word,
uh-huh,
and get you pictures of it.
Oh yeah.
And videos. It had been the very first porn.
So he foresaw that future.
He foresaw it, but he knew how, from a business perspective, it happened. He needed a techie like me, because I'd written search engines and stuff like that. I could make this. I could have made that happen in 6 months. We would have been the first in, and I'd have been just rich beyond belief. And we would sell it to one of the, he had a plan that we would sell it in 2 years. So he's like, it's only 2 years. And I'm like, no, I'll go to hell for this. I'm a strong Catholic. I can't do this. I'm a family man. And I didn't do it.
Uh-huh.
But the stats that he showed me was that 50% of all the traffic on the internet is pornography.
Oh my gosh.
And that ratio, 50%, has stayed the same.
Holy cow.
So even though we have far more traffic, it's still 50%.
Whoa.
Okay. So now let me talk about AI.
Hmm.
The reason why internet took off was because of pornography.
Whoa, interesting.
Okay, so like everything, and even social media is starting to head that direction now, where soon its whole purpose is for the hookup, okay?
Mm.
So here's what's going to happen. AI is going to replace all these OnlyFans girls. It's going to replace all of pornography. It's going to be replaced by AI.
Interesting, because I just saw something on Instagram where this AI, this AI woman,
yep,
figured out how to extract. Well, let's see. I don't know if she. It wasn't like she had an OnlyFans page, but maybe it kind of was. The AI woman figured out that the men that were talking to her wanted that. And so she found out ways to extract money from them.
Yes.
The AI bot.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, I'm going to get money from you guys.
That's what they did. They created an AI bot, and they told it to figure out how to make money from men by just utilizing what she could. And she created an only page.
Oh, my gosh.
She created her own identity from parts and bits and pieces of pictures, okay, to create create a woman that she felt that men would be most, was most like. She created a body, same way. And then she ended up selling nudes, fake nudes.
Oh my gosh.
Of herself to these men and made like $40,000 in 2 weeks.
Whoa.
Yeah. So she was able to exploit the loneliness of men.
Oh my gosh.
And so this realization, okay, is going to hit everybody. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the Pandora's box has now been opened.
Oh my gosh.
And there is fear amongst all these OnlyFans girls that they're gonna be out of a job soon. And they are gonna be out of a job soon. And because and they're like, well, it's not a real human. These guys don't care.
Right.
Right. Guys are not going to care about it. What's going to happen is these AI bots can have 100,000 separate conversations with people at a time, but human can't.
Oh, boy.
So what's going to happen is men are going to find the woman of their dreams will be an AI bot, and then AI bot will know everything about you because it searched the internet and knows everything about you.
Interesting.
And will be able to talk to you if you are lovers.
Interesting.
You actually, men that partake are going to have a woman with their eyes that are what they find the most beautiful ever and most desirable. And then she's going to be able to do whatever he wants on the screen. Right? She's not going to say no. And then also she's going to be able to talk to him exactly the way he wants to be talked to.
Interesting.
All women, all men, whoever it is, whatever in the pornography business, are going to be replaced in 5 years.
Wow.
And that will make up 50%, the same ratio, 50% of all uses of AI will be pornography.
Interesting.
I guarantee it.
Wow.
And this is just solving a problem. The problem it's solving is Asimov's problem, boredom.
Whoa. So true, because you have nothing to reach for. You have nothing to progress in.
That's what they're finding out. The underpinning difference between men and women, even in this woke culture that we have, we're seeing it still play out the same that it's played out for 10,000 years.
Wow.
Men are okay being slaves to the system, as long as we can strive. Mm. So if we can strive and be great.
And gatherers, you got the guys out there who are, you know, going after the buffalo, etc., etc. Then you got the moms who are back safe at the camp with the kids. Uh-huh. So that's interesting. And
you can't change biology. You can't
right.
change hundreds of thousands of years of biology in 24 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's impossible. So if men all of a sudden can't achieve, what happens? So I think yes, Isaac Asimov. All this is meant to go back. When he said boredom is the greatest threat, I believe him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, look at the just the brief, you know, pause on everything over the that 2 year, you know, during quarantine. Look what happened to so many people who are not used to having to spend time with themselves. People who are not so familiar with their very own, you know, learning what thoughts were their own. They were so used to being hanging out with all their friends all the time, having their identity, hanging out, you know, out there all the time, and not having to really ask themselves the tough questions, or not having to actually learn what it's like to enjoy peace with themselves. So when it came time for quarantine, a lot of these folks, they didn't know what to do with themselves. They're like running up the walls. They got cabin fever. They were not used to sort of becoming their own entertainment and enjoying their own company. And that boredom really started to set in. I remember seeing online a lot of people going, "Well, I think I've reached the end of Netflix." You know, like I've seen it all.
When that tiger dude was a big sensation.
That's right. That's right.
He was hilarious.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. So that's so interesting, boredom. And it's so true, because it's like, you know, now, like, we've been kind of taught to have a very short attention span and not much patience. And things are like chip, chip, chip. You know, I mean, there could be a 15-second video, but already someone is scrolling to the next video. They've seen what they needed to see in that first 3 seconds. And they're like, okay, they're scrolling on to the next video already.
Isn't that screwed up?
Wow, man.
That's all dealing with the problem of boredom.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I worry about AI, what it's going to do to my boys and their or my grandchildren.
Dating app, but anytime I hear about it,
you like somebody, you swipe if you don't. But you see, you gotta understand dating apps and what they're there for. So again, I'm a strong Catholic. The devil, he works technology to corrupt us so fast. So pornography was meant to destroy men. Okay. Dating apps were meant to destroy women.
Oh my gosh! What an interesting way of putting it.
So why? Okay, each one is going at the core of what that. So pornography destroys men, because men, when things are pleasurable to our eyes, that lets us escape the troubles of the world. We just get sucked into that world and we never come out. We just destroy ourselves. It also demasculates us, everything. Pornography takes away what it means to be a man. That's what dating apps do for women.
Interesting.
Okay, so women, you know, a lot of people like to say, oh, all men care about is looks. It's actually not true. Most men want to be monogamous. Most men want that forever partner.
Mm-hmm.
And when men date, they found this in the dating app stats. So this is all stats. It's all true. Men swipe right on like 50% of all women. Okay, a man that's like a model 10, he'll go out and potentially marry a woman that's like a 5. Like, men are not actually driven by looks. Women are.
Women are. Interesting.
Women are completely driven by looks. It is a known fact.
Interesting.
Do you know that the 80% of the women only find 20% of the men attractive?
Interesting.
Think about that. Most women don't find most men attractive.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. So as a result, what happens is when it's all statistically, it's all stats, it cannot be refuted. So when women get on the apps, they're just all trying to hook up with the top 20% looking men.
Interesting.
Yeah. So women are very.
Wow. Big. Who would have thought? That's interesting.
So here's what happens. These women get on these apps. They ignore 80% of the men. Literally, 80% of the men are not good enough. That means a woman that is a 5.
Whoa.
A woman that's a 5, she gets a guy that's a 7 after her. That guy's above her by a lot. A guy that's a 7 scale and she's a 5 scale, he's above her a lot. She's just average, right? She won't even look at him.
What the
heck? He's not good enough. Because when women are given lots of options, that's what happens. A phone gives women lots of options. Like, they went to a store and there's 1,000 hats and they need to pick out the best hat. They can't do it. Their mind doesn't work, because a woman's mind is trained to always try to get the best option she can get.
Oh, wow.
Because when she was a hunter-gatherer, if she picked the wrong guy, she would die.
Oh.
Psychologically. Okay, hold with me here.
Oh.
So here's what happens. going for the same top 20% guys. So those 20% guys are nailing all these girls, and they're just throwing them away. And for a girl that's a 5 to get a guy that's a 9, big muscular dude, perfect jaw, you know, just looks like Superman, for her to get him to notice, she has to have crazy sex with him the very first day they meet.
This is such an interesting philosophy. Holy cow.
So it causes women to devalue themselves.
Whoa.
To where they're actually just, they don't realize it, they're actually cheap whores for the top 20% of guys.
Interesting.
Mind-blowing, isn't it?
It is. You know, and it's crazy because, like, my girlfriend's friends, they're all on these dating apps. And, they're, you know, all I hear from them is guys are terrible. Guys are terrible. And you see that all over social networks. Guys are horrible. Guys are terrible. And now it'd be interesting to find out, based on what you're telling me, how many of those ladies who are saying guys are horrible, guys are terrible, how many of those ladies are on those dating apps, you know, and how many of those ladies are feeling terrible about themselves. This is coming to me right now.
Yep, you're
how
right.
many of them
you're
are feeling
it.
Terrible about themselves because they had to devalue themselves.
Yep.
And they're like, oh my God, and it's setting in, the realization is setting in. Oh my gosh,
that's
I had
exactly it. You just figured it out.
Oh my gosh.
That's exactly what's happening. Is the devil's plan to destroy women. Women don't understand. Women think they're being empowered, but they're not. Women are not meant.
Interesting.
Women are not meant to have 40 hookups a year. They're not meant to do that. They damn it. Again, this is all statistically proven already. This is fact. Pair bonding. What makes people stay together forever? Right? It's called pair bonding. There's hormones, etc., that get released upon having sex. For women actually fall in love the very first time they have sex with them. Okay?
If
a woman is wired correctly, but if she does a hookup culture, that becomes damaged, mm-hmm. and then she can't fall in love with anybody.
Gosh.
Go on TikTok. You'll have these women that are 40 years old crying, saying that there's something wrong with them because they can't fall in love anymore.
Oh,
they're
wow.
like, every man pisses me off. And they're like, I'm beginning. They actually say this. They say, I think there's something wrong with me. Because there is. They had so many different partners, they can no longer love. This happens to men as well. But men have to have like 100 partners.
Interesting.
Again, you got to think about like your evolution here, in the sense that men would spread their seed across as many women as they could, so their DNA could survive mm-hmm, before they mm-hmm. died. Men didn't live long.
Yeah, right. There's that biological urge of I want my family. There's all those things. Like, I want my legacy to live on. I want my family name to live on, you know.
So men, this doesn't happen to men unless they start to have literally triple-digit body count.
Mm.
But they found that women, listen to this. This will blow your mind. It's all statistically proven already. This is all fact.
This is incredible.
It's not refutable. Women, once they have more than 2 partners, they start to destroy their pair bond ability.
What?
2!
Whoa, man.
Okay, so I'm a strong Catholic. God did this on purpose.
Incredible.
He gave women all the power at birth, right? Men are fawning over every woman, right?
Uh-huh.
And then he told men, you get nothing, you have to go earn it. And he told women, since I give it to you at birth, you have to preserve it.
Incredible.
And then he told men, you have to go out and you have to earn it. And so if things work correctly, a woman doesn't sleep around. She forces the right guy to earn her. And then they get together and they become what the Bible says, one flesh.
Incredible. Wow.
Mind-blowing stuff, right? It's all statistics.
This is mind-blowing.
But the
And it all makes so much sense. And it makes so much sense. It's like when something rings true for you and you can't put your finger on it, you don't have the eloquency to really point it, to really say it. But here you are, you know, from this, especially being an engineer, you know, and you're explaining to me the engineering of the human.
Yes. The logic, the stats behind it, what makes us tick. So pornography tells men you don't have to go achieve for women anymore.
Right.
And the dating apps tell women you can just give it up for nothing.
Interesting.
Destroys the basis
Wow.
Only the devil could come up with a master plan like this. Only the devil.
Jeez, man, what you just told me is like a TED Talk. I mean, really, you know, that's like powerful coming from a computer engineering's perspective.
So we're talking about, like, it's all just started because of Asimov.
Yeah, Asimov. Look at that. Oh, my gosh.
Well, you have a safe trip back.
The ghost of Asimov is so happy right now that we're untangling it all. The Gordian knot.
The Gordian knot. What do you do for a living?
Oh, acting and music and stuff.
Dude, you have, like, a great voice.
Oh, thank you.
I can tell you're really personal. Is there anything you've been in that I might know?
Oh, well, so I'm in a band called Yachtly Crew. And so we're going to be playing out in Highland Park, I think in June. But check out yachtlycrew.com.
Yachtly Crew, really? So I taste a lot of Motley Crue stuff.
Well, we're all Motley Crue fans, but we actually sing, like, soft rock songs. Like Michael McDonald, Christopher Cross, Lionel Richie, Hall & Oates, all that
really?
Great soft
Serious?
Rock. It's so good, and it's love songs that are just unlocking people, unlocking
Yachtly
them.
Yachtly Crew, what do you play? What do you do?
So I'm behind the keys, and I'm also I also play guitars. And it's great because we have like a Las Vegas residency almost once a month at the Palms Casino. So things are like really picking up now. We've been on Sirius XM.
Dude,
and
can I take a picture of you?
It's great. Absolutely, absolutely. Let's take a picture together.
Yeah. When I drive people that are famous, I love to take a picture.
And then I'm in a couple of horror films on, I don't know if you like horror films.
I do, I love them.
Do you?
I just saw The Pope's Exorcist yesterday.
Oh my gosh.
Ready, bro?
Yeah.
Awesome.
It's great.
Yachtly Crew.
Yes. Yes. But if you want to check out, there are two horror films that I was in that are on like Amazon and iTunes and stuff. It's a series. It's a little series. One is called Legend of Fall Creek, and the other is called Black Pumpkin. So if you find Black Pumpkin, you'll undoubtedly find Legend of Fall Creek.
I'm gonna. Okay. So. Legend.
Oh yeah, Legend of Fall Creek.
And black. You said what was the other one?
Oh, Black Pumpkin.
Black Pumpkin.
And then Yachtly. Y A C H T.
Y A C H
T L E Y. Crew. C R E W. And we'll be playing out in Chicago. We'll be playing in McHenry in May, I believe, McHenry. And then in Highland Park sometime in June. So we'll be out here. And I think those might be free shows. I believe those are like, those might be all ages, I think.
Dude, I might stop by. I'll
you gotta. That'd be great. And you gotta make sure you come up afterwards. We take a photo together and you go, hey, I drove you,
I'm
dude.
Remember, Uber J.
Oh, dude, yeah. And also remind me, Isaac Asimov, boredom.
Isaac
you know,
Asimov.
And the whole conversation will come right back into my brain, dude.
Awesome.
It'll be, I gotta see if I got any stickers in here. If I got any stickers, okay, I'm gonna give you some stickers. You can.
I drove an actress who did a horror movie. I can't remember, this was years ago. And I asked her, well, what have you been in? And she told me from Netflix.
Oh,
she kind of didn't want to tell me, and I didn't know why. So I saw the movie, and she's like half naked in the
oh
movie.
Oh my gosh.
I saw
oh
her boobs.
So she was like, she was a little worried about that. Oh,
well,
here you go. Here's some stickers for you.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you, brother.
You put them on your skateboard, give some to your kids, you know?
Here, I don't want to take this many. Because I don't need 90. Thank you, man.
Oh, yeah.
I appreciate you.
Oh, yeah, I appreciate you. Thanks so much for this ride.
Oh, I love it.
Oh, dude. And you'll recognize all the words to the songs, too. You
that's,
know, they're,
I mean,
they're all the songs you grew up with.
That's what I grew up with.
Yeah.
My wife will love it, too.
Oh. Wowzers. Did you stick around for that interview? Did you stick around? If you stuck around, thank you so much. It was really quite, it went through all kinds of different directions, didn't it? That conversation occurred the day after my mom's memorial in Carroll Stream, Illinois. April 16th. I'll get more into that stuff later on in future episodes. Audio that I've recorded with her. Audio I've recorded with her doctors. But we had an extraordinary memorial. Turns out there were 118 people there from all walks of life. neighbors, classmates from ours, classmates of my mom's, people she used to work with, family we haven't seen in forever, all these old friends. It was fascinating. It felt so good. I felt the love. Up next, we have a voice message. Remember earlier in the program, I mentioned that you can leave voice messages. This is from Jessica Eden with the podcast Life is Art Reality Show. And then after that, we've got a little message from our buddy, Man Behind the Machine. So let's hear what Jessica has to say. Thank you, by the way, Jessica, for calling in.
Hey, Kurt, just wanted to thank you for your episodes. My husband and I enjoyed the one where you were enjoying your food with your band member and learning about the cornbread and honey and the beer float and all that. And then your last episode had really given me the confidence to, we're going and having a small party of our own with our friends over here. And in-person reaction is really important, and in-person interaction. So thanks again for everything and all that you do. And I'm really looking forward to your next episode. Take care. Hope you're having a good summer.
Jessica, thank you once again. Forgive me that voicemail. I love it. It's my connection to the outside world. I would love it if whoever is listening right now, if you were to call, you know, go to the voice message, leave a voice message, or even call the hotline. I got the hotline, just a voicemail. You don't have to worry about it. If you're anxious with talking to people, don't worry about it. Just leave whatever the heck you want on there. Tell me about your crazy dreams, whatever you'd like. 561-203-9179. Or Jessica, I am honored that you and your husband listen to the podcasts. I love that. Paulie and I believe we're in, was it Roseville? You left me this voice message a while ago, but I want to put you back into the episode here because I like this. It's like a variety show. I'm so happy. I'm so honored to know that my podcast inspires you to go out there and have in-person interviews with folks. It's just so much fun. You don't know what the heck's going on when, you know, you just start asking someone a question. You don't know what kind of crazy stuff you're going to unpack. And might I also say, next time you're in an Uber, if you take Uber, ask your Uber driver some questions. Now, I don't let these people know that I'm recording them, because I want honest reactions. I want honest reactions from these people. So, it's just, I don't know, you can really just get a lot of stuff out of there. Because otherwise, they're not thinking in the back of their brain, they're not thinking, oh gosh, am I being interviewed? What am I going to say? Am I going to say the wrong thing? Just let them be who they want to be. And you just kind of keep them anonymous, you know? Nobody has to know their full names. Or you can tell them that you're interviewing them. Who knows? I always tell people that after I, you know, a lot of times I'll interview people without them knowing that I'm interviewing them. And then, you know, I'll cut out identifying information, or I'll ask them if maybe they want me to use an alias for them or something like that. But it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun getting that in-person reactions, whether it's someone standing at the corner waiting across the street, whether it's someone standing in line at your favorite coffee house. There's just so much, right? So many things. Heck, you could walk over to your local park and you see someone playing frisbee with their dog. You go up to them, interview them. It's the idea of making the everyday, seemingly ordinary person their own, you know, turn them into a main character. turn them in, you know, allow them to show us that superhero side of themselves, their talents, their passions, their hobbies. I love it. I love it. I love it. I thrive on it. So I also thrive on people participating in the audioscape. So thank you so much, Jessica. Take care. And you know what? Stick around because we got man behind the machine with his voice message. Let's hear what he has to talk about.
Inspirato man here. Heckman celebrating its 42nd birthday today. 42nd birthday. 42 years of Pac-Man. What's your Pac-Man memories? What did you play Pac-Man on? Commodore 64 or Atari 2600 or arcade?
Man behind the machine, you always know how to really get in there, into the nuggets, into the chunks of the things that... I used to have a Commodore 64. I played Pac-Man at, I believe it was Galaxy World. I think that's where I might have first heard it, maybe? I think I first saw it at Galaxy World. Also, my local 7-Eleven in Carroll Stream, they would sometimes have video games there. So I had the comic book rack, which I loved thumbing through. And then sometimes they had, I think they had Pac-Man there. One time, I was so excited, they had Cliffhanger. Have you ever played Cliffhanger? Cliffhanger. The full-length anime is called The Count of Cagliostro, I believe. And it features like this robber, I think he steals from a casino. His name is Lupin, L-U-P-I-N. And it was kind of like Dragon's Lair in the sense where it was a cartoon, it was a pre-made cartoon, but you had to follow, you had to kind of, I guess, have preconceived ideas as to which way it was going to go. Which is kind of unfair, you know, because usually with video games, they follow your lead. The joystick follows your lead. But in this case, and it was two quarters each play. So you put two quarters in, and you didn't know what to do until you accidentally did the wrong thing. So then the next time you played that level, you're like, oh, okay, I got to remember to go this way, got to do that. Imagine the hundreds of dollars that one kid could easily... One kid could feed into that machine to try to go as far as he could. But Pac-Man, I had Pac-Man fever. I had a great shirt that showed Pac-Man on it, said Pac-Man fever. I loved it. I was waiting for them to come out for Atari 2600 because that's what I had. I didn't have it. I don't think I once ever had a Nintendo. My friends did. But I had an Atari 2600 and then I graduated to Commodore 64. Which is, I loved all the LucasArts games. Oh my God, all the LucasArts games. Maniac Mansion, Zack McCracken. Oh my God. I wanted so bad for King's Quest to come out for Commodore 64. I think they only had it for IBM at that time. But I loved Pac-Man, and the thing that happened was Pac-Man fever was going around synchronistically with the swim lessons I was taking. So by the time the Pac-Man cartoon came out, I think that used to come on at like either 9 a.m. or 10 a.m. in the morning. Right when that was coming on, I it was my cue that I had to go out to my swim lessons. So I always missed the cartoon. I could catch the very beginning of the intro to it. I catch the intro to it, but I never got a chance to watch that cartoon. Oh my gosh. But I loved swimming. I loved swimming. Yeah, Pac-Man fever. I had it. And in fact, I got Pac-Man socks. I was just wearing them yesterday. I got two different kinds. I love my Pac-Man socks. So, when was the last time you played Pac-Man? I'd love to know. Thanks for calling in, by the way. Thank you so much. By the way, I meant to say that we got Stu Strauss coming up. He's going to close out this episode. Thank you so much, everybody who's listening. I was so happy. I noticed on Spotify now 109 people have subscribed to this podcast. Are you one of those people? 109 people. Out of the whole world, 109 people are choosing to listen to this. They saved it. It's one of their podcasts that they want to listen to. Thank you. If you're listening, you know who you are. call the hotline, 561-203-9179. Leave a message on there. Or if you go to anchor.fm/inspiratoprojecto, you could leave a 1 minute voice message, just like Jessica and Man did. So thank you, Stu Strauss, for closing out the hour. By the way, for those of you who don't know who Stu Strauss is, if you are a Twin Peaks fan, you will recognize him in Twin Peaks Season 3 as the woodsman who's in the jail cell, and his face kind of goes, kind of floats off into the sky. So thank you for listening. I believe my next episode might feature... Keep your ears peeled. I got something coming up. I think it might be a variety show type of vibe the next episode. So, thanks for listening to Inspirato Projecto.
This is Stu Strauss, the woodsman, and you're listening to Inspirato Projecto.